the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, the looters, and people who, in many instances, have absolutely no clue what they are doing.
Welcome to What Radicalized You, a podcast of stories and experiences that have shaped people's ideas about our world and the way society should function.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nefshalina Khan, and I wear many hats, which I know sounds super cliche, but it's true. And so at this point in my life, I would say I am a writer, a sometimes writer, and I work in different forms of writing. So narrative, nonfiction, or storytelling, or counter-storying, which is a concept that emerges out of the need to proliferate alternative narratives that we don't normally see in mainstream media and kind of divest from mainstream media because it's never going to be for us. I also identify, I guess, as a woman of color, but I like to be nuanced about that because that's such a big bucket. So I am specifically Moroccan, Pakistani, and have some Amazigh history and heritage. But that's all complicated when I'm so mixed race, and usually mixed race is perceived as like a race and white. And I'm Muslim, and I grew up in the United States and Canada. So that's a bit about me. And I do basically in my work life, I do community-based research and facilitation, and I work in public and community health. Being somebody who obviously I'm never going to want to see somebody like me as president, because I can't really imagine that. I've never been able to imagine that since I was a child, because I'm so mixed race that it's just not going to happen. Mixed race and Muslim, and I come from a very cash poor background. And so I think what radicalized me is growing up very poor in Florida. And I think that's something that makes me a bit different sometimes from people in Canada. And now I do have a lot of privilege now as an adult, because I'm able to work and make income that my parents could not make. I'm still not very wealthy at all. But when I say poor, I don't think people understand what poor means sometimes when they're saying they're poor, especially on the left. Like the type of poor where like you aren't Christian, but you go to a food bank where you have to do Christian prayers to get expired food from stores, or like the type of poor where like I can count the amount of times I went to a doctor on one hand before the age of 20. The type of poor where poor and undocumented, where your mom can't go get prenatal care before you're born because they're also scared of being deported. That's a type of poor that I don't think many people have a full understanding of. And I think a lot of young Muslims, and this is not to hate or be critical of them, what radicalized them is September 11th and growing up in a post 9/11 America or Canada. I think it's different for me, and it's different for a lot of my friends who grew up as poor Muslims, because Muslims were being surveilled before 9/11, and there was racism before 9/11. And I think a kind of industry came out of these, like, I got bullied for school lunch narratives that almost erases the very violent repression and oppression of Muslims that came through immigration in different pathways or came very poorly. So my dad has always been very precarious as a worker. Both my parents did not go to post-secondary education. It's very different. And I think growing up as the oldest immigrant daughter of two people who were not educated the way that a lot of immigrants come to the country now, especially in Canada with the point system, radicalized me from a very young age. From a very young age, I was navigating things, situations that children shouldn't have to navigate. And I'm not upset that I did. I think it made me a strong person and a vocal person and very sensitive and a very sensitive observer in a very harsh world. And I'm grateful for it, because sometimes people are like, oh, how do you think of these things? Or how are you so aware of certain things? And it's like, that's my lived experience. And it's okay that it is, because now I get to advocate for people with those experiences, especially for migrant justice here, because I want to see a world where that's not the case for children or families. So I think growing up very cash poor, seeing people have to do health procedures on themselves in my community in Florida, and we didn't have YouTube then, being uninsured is awful. And so my family came to Canada basically to have health care. And so I think those moments radicalized me from a very young age. I used to go to a mosque in Indian Wells in Kissimmee, Florida, that started having heavy surveillance. And I was a child going to Quran school on weekends. And at the same time, Jummah prayer on Fridays, men just started like disappearing. And so a lot of men stopped going to the mosque, self-going, which includes my father. But a lot of men started getting picked up randomly and with like no charges because of the way that that was happening. And one of them was my dad's best friend, and being Pakistani, that's an uncle, right? And so I think having like all these fragmented memories or memories of like the photos from Abu Ghraib, which people now post as adults and think it's like a gotcha on Twitter. But like, if you were a child, and I've tweeted this before and talked with my friends about it, if you were a Muslim child, you remember those photos in a very different way from a young age. And it's like kind of not a gotcha. It's like a gut visceral feeling when you see them. And so I think what radicalized me is these different moments from a very young age and trying to make sense of them, because I always wanted to understand why. And I think being Muslim tells us that we all deserve to live in big and full ways. And I kept trying to process how we let certain people live and how we let certain people die, and like kind of how is it really a life if a government makes life unlivable for certain people. So I always wanted to work in health, and community health is a big one, but also it's why I'm a researcher, because I wanted to make sense of things. I wanted to understand why certain people have to suffer in certain ways. It's been a long journey for me, but I think I will always remember the kind of moments of poverty I saw as a child and discrimination. And I am very educated now, and I don't have an accent, and I can navigate different worlds that a lot of people in my life can't. And I feel like I'm always straddling worlds. So I think my biggest thing is I know that I have relations and commitments that I need to honor. And I get to be indignant about so much because of the privileges I have as like a first generation university educated person. And so I wouldn't feel good without being radical in these spaces and just like taking what I get. And I could easily move up a corporate ladder, but that made me feel disgusting given the background I come from and the people I come from. And so part of me, I think, will always be poor because I'm so connected still with obviously my parents, the people I grew up with, the people I went to school with when I was younger, my family back home. So I will always have these obligations, I think, with me. And I radicalized from a very young age. Like, it didn't make sense to me why we're fighting for our freedom in like Afghanistan or Iraq. None of that made sense to me. And it was less about being bullied or anything like that for being Muslim. It's more about, why are there still people rotting in Guantanamo Bay right now? And they've been rotting in there since I was a child. I'm more concerned about the liberation of my people, because I don't think I can ever feel at ease when I like live in Canada now, very privileged. I can't feel easy while like white supremacy burgeons, or there's people rotting in a prison that are related to me and my identity. And again, this comes from being Muslim. When one of us hurts, we all hurt. And my tax dollars are implicated in so much of this as an adult now. And as a child, it wasn't implicated in it. But I want to make sense of why certain people suffer and why certain people thrive. It's a little bit sometimes daunting and almost gives me like whiplash when I see people fighting for positions in like a boardroom, for example, in things that are so aspirational in this weird way where I'm like, there are brown and black people in this country who whatever is a boardroom, like forget a boardroom, like they are like being killed for being themselves. So like, does it really matter if we get like a CEO that looks like us? Not really. And I have a friend the other day that brought up how, based on the way the immigration systems are working right now, we're going to see more brown faces in high up places. And I think what radicalizes me is like, I don't want that. Like, I don't want multiculturalism. I want an end to white supremacy. And I think people forget that in Canada, at least, we have a melting pot, or not a melting pot, we have a mosaic. In America, there's a melting pot. And actually, it's more insidious to have this mosaic here, because it just means that the people who are maybe the prison guards look like us, and that allows for more violence, or like an insidious violence, in my opinion. From a young age, it's interesting to see the different routes people go down based on class. And I think what radicalized me is growing up poor and staying poor for so long. And I actually technically am still poor, but I just can like now buy food that I like, which is not being rich, but it means I have privilege and obligations and relations. And I think anyone who is a leftist should always try to honor their relations and the obligations we have in this world, because we live in the imperial core if you're living in North America or a Western country. And it doesn't matter how bad our lives are for the most part, it's still better than the majority of the world that we benefit from being the way that they live is how we benefit here. And I think that's important to think about. And if you have a passport, an American or Canadian or British passport, we are implicated in so much. And like, I don't know if it's because I do go back to Morocco often, that the stuff you see there is really like, it really breaks your heart, but in a way that should be actionable. And I think people don't think about being actionable sometimes. And I think that's the most important thing as being a leftist. You have to be a bit more actionable than posting online. And I say this as somebody who's very online and very on Twitter, but I try to give time to different actionable items and causes, but also redispersing when you start to make it. Like, a lot of us get to go to university and make it here and try to actually not only platform or post a link, but like giving your time is the biggest thing you can do. If you can't materially do a lot, giving your time is one of the biggest things you can do. And giving your time in different ways, whether that's mentorship, I've mentored young folks who would never have the opportunity to do, for example, poetry workshops. I have a friend who talks about how the most radical thing you can do for in a lot of brown and black neighborhoods is teach a kid how to ride a bike or teach a kid how to swim and give them that small moment and feeling of joy. And so I'm not saying like, you know, take up arms, but I'm saying like there's these micro moments we have that we can share and spread like knowledge and empower people, teaching people how to read. There's literacy programs at drop-ins in so many places. And if you know how to read and write, there's so many people in Canada and America who can't read and write or can't read and write past like a third grade level. In Toronto, there's a drop-in and a literacy program where it's people who can't read or write, and you change their lives by just teaching somebody how to read or write. And that's like a very leftist value. Knowledge is power, and the revolution starts at home. And so that's part of my story and the things I value. I value sharing education and knowledge, sharing what I have. It's okay to like ruffle feathers and speak up. Like one of the things that really bothers me is when people are worried about job precarity, especially right now with Palestine. One of my mom's best friends is Palestinian, and her son was my friend, and they had to leave Florida because they weren't accepted. And then growing up in high school, one of my mom's coworkers is Palestinian and was denied refugee status with his three daughters and a son who was born in Canada. His son has autism and was born here, but because the rest of the family is not allowed to stay here, he can't benefit from being a quote unquote Canadian in the ways that Canada acts so benevolent and giving. In Palestine, and especially Gaza, which is an open air prison, there are no resources for that child because of America and Canada and the amount of money we fuel into keeping Gaza so oppressed. Those children face such psychological terror. And I think having people like that in my life and seeing moments like that constantly, there's no way to just like have a great time in Canada and just take like nice girl boss, brown girl positions, which you can get in Canada because of the multicultural mosaic we have. Just seeing moments of people in my life be deported, denied entry, them having family killed constantly. My grandmother was denied citizenship here, and she died a pretty bad death in Morocco from a bad, inadequate healthcare system. She was just given extended visitor visas here because this country doesn't want to take people that they deem sick, which is one of the most ableist things about this country. I think everybody has these moments. If you come from a certain background, you have to be very privileged if you're a person in this world to not have like a single moment in your life that doesn't do this to you. Just being a person in the world, if you're sensitive to what's going on around you, not sensitive in the feelings way, but just aware of what's going on around you. Everybody knows somebody, I think, that's been grinded down by a bad job. people usually have a parent or a loved one, an extended family, if they have to go that far, that's been treated awfully by a boss who's just trying to like squeeze them to death for capitalism. The fact that like Walmart greeting people who greet people at Walmart are usually like very old people who shouldn't even be working anymore. The way that baby formula is locked up in grocery stores, like there's just these little moments that you see in vignettes and in your life that just should radicalize you and should radicalize everybody around us. It makes no sense when people are like grinded down for mental health concerns or capitalism grinding them down that people want to code it as resilience. There's just all of these moments that shape you. Like I talked about those Abu Ghraib photos. That didn't happen to me. I'm so privileged that that will never happen to me. But I saw those in my childhood and I was like, why are these American women holding the leashes of these men and doing this to them? There's all of these moments where it's like, no, actually we're hurting and it's okay to be hurting, but let's identify what the root causes are. And so I really hope people realize like me, like you don't need to have something personally even happen to you all the time. It doesn't have to affect you.